The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
We have a very interesting discussion on tap for tonight. We're going to be talking with Len Kasten. He's written a book. Where did the book go? Hold on. He's written a book called Dark Fleet, the Secret Nazi Space Program and the Battle for the Solar System. This is a very, very interesting book. Len outlines evidence and facts related to the idea that the Germans, the Nazis, did not necessarily lose World War II. In fact, what they did was they abandoned World War II. They allowed the distraction to continue and offered basically what would be considered a alternate reality, if you will, whereby they thought by losing the war, quote unquote losing, that they would provide cover for what their true intentions were, which was a dominance of the solar system, not just the planet, but the solar system. And Werner von Braun is a figure in all of this. The U.S. government is a figure in all of this. And an alien race is a big part of this. And that's what we're going to be talking with Len tonight. I'm really anxious to have this conversation with him because he's done a lot of work and a lot of research, and it's all presented here again in the book, Dark Fleet. Please support the program. Go to patreon.com/Johaw. That's J-O-H-A-W. Len is our guest. We're talking to Len Kasten. We're talking about his book, Dark Fleet, and we've got a lot to talk about tonight. I'm very excited to have Len with us. And Len, thank you so much for being here. It's not surprising to me, however, that we had a little difficulty connecting. It seems like anytime we start talking about these types of issues, these things where there might be a little bit of a shadow government involved or some secret program that involves some type of alien connection, we seem to have some technical trouble. It's probably not something that's unfamiliar to you either.
Well, I've had it before, but last night I had a three-hour conversation by Skype.
Well, the good thing is we got you on. It doesn't matter. So we're anxious to have this conversation. Thanks for being here tonight. Let's start out by getting a sense of what we're going to be talking about. Dark Fleet, what is this book about?
Well, you know, my last book, Alien World Order, I did not complete what I wanted to communicate. And I realized then that I had to write one more book about this whole subject because I ended that book on Earth and did not go off into the solar system, and I realized that's what I had to do. That's why I wrote this book, because it's really all about the solar system.
Yeah,
the whole problem is not limited. It's not limited to Earth at all.
Yeah, and we're of course talking about the fact that we've been kind of given an alternate version of history here in a way. Let's kind of jump into this. We were told that that Nazi Germany lost World War II. At the end of the war, they were the losers. But you actually present a very, very different version of things.
Yes, it wasn't the Nazis that lost. It was Germany that lost, and really it was mainly Hitler that lost. And by that time, all of the scientists and all the people in the know in Germany were through with Hitler anyway. They didn't want to have anything further to do with him because they realized that he was the problem. By 1943, they barely wanted to get rid of him. And, of course, the assassination attempt didn't occur till 1944. By that time, most of the scientists and the business people and the aerospace people had already started moving to Antarctica, and they didn't want to have anything further to do with Hitler. Although Hitler did survive, and he did go to Argentina.
So when we start talking about a Nazi space program, and we start talking about some of the things that they accomplished and the alliances they have, which we'll get into all of that, was Hitler part of that, or was it being done without Hitler's knowledge?
Well, Hitler just wasn't kept in the loop, basically, because he didn't know anything about it and didn't want to learn anything about it.
Yeah,
he knew that his scientists were top-notch, and he thought that they could take care of everything. But he preferred to be playing general and trying to be a general on the Eastern Front, which he really botched up, and they realized that at Stalingrad. Now, he just didn't have the smarts for it, for the whole thing. And the scientists realized that, and the generals realized that, And that's why they tried to kill him in 1944, but they didn't succeed. But he did survive, and he did go to Argentina. However, they were already in Antarctica. Most of the top scientists, most of the top aerospace people, they were already in Antarctica under 2 miles of ice.
So Adolf Hitler takes control in Germany, we'll say 1933, and he spends a lot of years building up and gearing up for war. At what point do these Nazi scientists and this Nazi subculture, for lack of a better way to describe it, start taking on what would be considered a separate path from what Hitler's ambitions may have been, go to Antarctica, start these programs that we'll get into that involve space exploration? At what point does that begin?
It really began in 1938, a whole year before they attacked Poland. It was one whole year prior to the outbreak of World War II. So you see that they were already planning the Antarctic escape even at that point. Oh. And they sent their top scientists to Antarctica. You may have read that in my book about the journey of the Schwabenland. Did you read that part of the book?
Yes, absolutely. But what you're saying here is that this effort to go to Antarctica and start and create a base there and then start to project into space was, you just used the word escape. That was the plan all along, knowing that, what, Hitler was going to actually suffer defeat because they recognized his ambition and his plans weren't realistic the way he wanted to pursue them?
More or less. The top German scientists knew that already.
Yeah.
But they knew he was kind of a madman, and they didn't want anything to do with him after that. After he got to Argentina, they basically abandoned him. Actually, the reptilians abandoned him earlier than that. They abandoned him in 1943. After the Allies landed on Anzio Beachhead, the reptilians realized that he wasn't going to be of any use to them anymore, and they basically abandoned him. Up until that point, they had been in an alliance with the reptilians.
When did the reptilians ally themselves with Nazi Germany? Was that prior to 1938?
Yes, 1933.
It was 1933.
How did
the reptilians decide to ally with Nazi Germany? What did they see in Nazi Germany that made them pick this Nazi regime to be their allies here on Earth?
Well, I went into great detail about that in the early part of the book, describing why they selected the Germans to start with, which they did. And they had the kind of ruthless mentality that they wanted for their allies. And they knew that they would be the best ones to use in terms of starting the war itself. But they knew that the war was not going to turn out right anyway. They knew that once the United States geared up their industrial capacity, and Hitler had to fight a two-front war, it would basically be useless. The whole thing would be useless.
Was there something about German engineering and technology that attracted the reptilians, or was it the other way around? Was it the reptilians that provided the Germans with some of this advanced technology that we later learned they had in many cases, and that really gave them a technological advantage during the war itself?
Yes, the reptilians did give them a lot of that technology, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you've read my previous book, Alien World Order.
I haven't read that.
You may not have read that. Okay, in that book, I made a rather outrageous claim, and I thought that people would view it as being outrageous, but actually, so many people agreed with it that I was very surprised. I took the position that after World War I, there wasn't very much left of the German army at all.
Right.
And what was left was a bunch of dispirited veterans and some raw recruits, and the reptilians knew that. And they made an arrangement with Hitler where they would create an army for him. It would clone him an army off the planet, and that would become his new fighting force in 1933. And that army, that initial army, the Wehrmacht, was a cloned army. That was the claim I made in my book. And I was surprised at how many people readily agreed with me, because it became very clear. because all they knew how to do was to obey orders.
Yeah.
And they were like cyborgs. The German army was like cyborgs. And the reptilians knew that millions of soldiers would get chewed up in Russia anyway.
Right.
So they felt they could sort of just throw them away.
So when we all learned about Hitler's assertions in his book Mein Kampf, and of course we always hear, you know, the master race and the Aryan race and this effort by the Nazi Party to purify, was that code for cloning?
No, the cloning was a decision by the reptilians. They realized that he would not have a chance without a cloned army. Because he did have the connection with the Krupp family, which gave him the armaments he needed. But the Krupps were fanatic monarchists. And they were very happy to go along with that. But really, they knew he needed a real army. And he just didn't have one after World War I because as a result of the Treaty of Versailles, he was only permitted to have a whole military of 100,000 men.
That's right.
I think that would have been Army, Navy, and Air Force. And that certainly wasn't the case standing out there on the parade fields of Nuremberg in 1934. They were all bright and shiny recruits, brand new recruits, 160,000 of them, standing at attention on the parade fields of Nuremberg. Where did they come from? And you know, Hitler admitted it himself, by the way, in a conversation he had with Bormann. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you haven't read my other book. Let me explain that to you. Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
Martin Bormann did all the work for Hitler's financial work and getting all the people he needed in his fortress on top of the mountain, and he asked Bormann to get him some help to clean up the house and so forth, domestic help. And Bormann was not able to get those people, so Hitler said to him, "I produced an entire army for you, and you can't get me some domestic help?" And that he was referring to the army that he had more or less gotten from the reptilians. They had cloned an army for him.
So were the Nazi leadership all complicit and involved in this effort and this relationship with the reptilians, or was it limited to just maybe a few of the most noted ones?
It was limited to the basic officers surrounding him, mainly Himmler, Speer, Bormann, Goebbels, and Goering, a few of the top people. The others really did not know about it.
Is there any evidence that the United States government was aware of this while it was going on?
Well, you know, there was a connection between the business community in America and the Nazis, yes. There were some Nazi sympathizers in the business community, and there are several books out on that subject. The American businessmen were very canny and very, very, very smart about making money, and they realized they had to work with the German industrial people in order to do that. And Henry Ford was selling them trucks before the war broke out.
Right.
Even after the war broke out, the American soldiers were startled to find that the enemy was driving Ford trucks.
Henry Ford's sympathies for the Nazis are pretty well legendary. When the Nazis began this relationship with the reptilians in 1933, what did the reptilians promise them? Do we know?
I'm sorry, say that again?
The relationship between the reptilians and the Nazis. Obviously, the reptilians were looking for the Nazis to do something for them, but what were the Nazis expecting from the reptilians? What was promised to the Nazis by the reptilian race that made them go along with this alliance?
Well, Hitler had every intention of ruling the world. He was already designing his capital city with Albert Speer, the architect. And let me read to you what Albert Speer said in his book. Do you know who Albert Speer was?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he was very instrumental in, he was the architect. Did he also manage production manufacturing in the Nazi
yes.
regime? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was Hitler's Minister of Armaments.
That's right.
Now, here's what he said in his book, Infiltration. Let me read it to you here. This is very important because, you know, Speer was never really on board with a lot of Hitler's ideas about racial purity at all. And he went along with it, but he didn't realize that Heinrich Himmler had Hitler's attention, and that it was Himmler who basically was Hitler's confidant, not Speer. So here's what Speer said in his book, Infiltration. Hold on just a minute. I have in chapter 15 of the book, I entitled it The Slave Trade. Did you read that chapter?
Yep.
Let me just read that first paragraph to you. This vision of a peacetime Reich was thus based on the existence of millions of permanent slaves who were neither political opponents nor so-called racial enemies. Because of economic necessity, they would be kept in camps all their lives with women in brothels. This empire of slaves, which was to stretch all the way to the Ural Mountains, would be the basic energy source of a Europe that had to prepare to conquer the greatest enemy, the United States of America. And that was written by Albert Speer, speaking of Hitler's plans. So you see, Speer realized that Hitler was a madman. He knew it, because he worked closely with him. But he didn't realize how crazy Hitler really was.
I think there are several Nazis that got that, figured that out along the way. Rudolf Hess, I think, was probably one of them as well.
Yes, Hess was one of them. So, all of the scientists and the businessmen knew they had to, eventually, by 1943, they realized they had to get rid of Hitler. And that's when they started plotting the assassination. The assassination attempt didn't take place till early 1944.
So in 1938, some of these key Nazis develop a plan, and they go to Antarctica and build a base there. What's the purpose of the base?
Well, they did it at the behest of the reptilians. The reptilians were the ones who told them to do it, and they did it. Now, think about it. In 1938, that was a full year before the invasion of Poland. Yet they mounted this tremendous expedition to the South Pole, crossing 6,000 miles of the Atlantic to a frozen wasteland that they really knew nothing about. And yet they took the top people, top scientists with them. They were completely ready for what awaited them there. And it didn't matter that they were about to mount a war against Germany, against England and France.
Right.
At that point.
And they build the base at the behest of the reptilians, and that becomes a launching point and a facility by which they ultimately aim their sights at the rest of the solar system.
Exactly, and that was the important. That was what was important to them. That's what the reptilians and they had agreed to, that they would become partners with the Draco, with the reptilians, in invading the rest of the solar system and beyond. And it would be from that particular base, which they named Base 211, and that became their launching point to the Moon and Mars. And their top scientists were really already in Antarctica by the time the war was over.
And we know that some of that technology was used at the time to create things like, you know, the flying bombs, the V1 and V2 rockets that were menacing England at the time.
Exactly. They call them wonder weapons.
Yeah, yeah. And we also know that the Allies encountered airplanes, the ME-262, ME-163, these other jet and rocket aircraft that were unlike anything that the Allies had seen or even had on their drawing tables.
That's right. And we had nowhere near the capabilities in rocketry that they had with von Braun and Dornberger in Peenemünde. So they were way ahead of us, way ahead of us. And they had already started developing the atom bomb. They were already mining uranium. They would have gotten there very soon if we hadn't beat them to it. All of that information was coming to them from the reptilians.
The Nazis, with the assistance of the reptilians, start to launch spacecraft into space outside of Earth's orbit?
As early as 1939.
Because it was that quick.
Well, the Schwabenland colony was founded in 1938, and then they started sending submarines there, one after another after that, all during the war. While they were fighting the war, they were also building up the colony in Antarctica. And by the time the war was over, it was a thriving colony. They were manufacturing flying saucers by 1946.
Was the war itself... Go ahead.
Now, I also mentioned in the book that Himmler took over the Antarctic expedition after Göring. They got rid of Göring because he wasn't doing the job, and Himmler took over. That means it became an SS operation, essentially. And Himmler was very interested in creating a racially pure civilization in Antarctica. And so by that time they had captured or invaded Russia, and he rounded up 10,000 Aryan women, blonde, blue-eyed women, and sent them to Antarctica along with 2,500 of his fiercest fighting force, the Waffen-SS, and the purpose was to create a new master race in Antarctica. So they were already going down that road, and Himmler was more or less in charge of it while they were fighting World War II. And Albert Speer, his minister of armaments, knew nothing about that. He was kept in the dark.
Was the war itself a distraction? Was it a deliberate attempt to draw all eyes away from what they were doing in Antarctica?
Well, you know, they had to go along with Hitler's directions.
Right.
Hitler was a madman, basically. He was really crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought he could be a general and he could win a battle on two fronts, even though Napoleon couldn't do it and the Kaiser couldn't do it, he thought he could do it.
Right.
And he had no experience in military technology or military strategy, and he didn't even listen to his generals. He had some top generals. He had some great generals. And he decided that he was going to be Mr. General. And when they realized he was crazy and they couldn't do anything with him, he was going to sit on top of his mountain there in the Austrian Alps and play around with his girlfriend, Eva Braun, and while they were burning millions of people in the ovens down below. I mean, he was really crazy. He was basically crazy.
I mean, you talk about the quality of his military commanders, and despite the fact that they were the basically instruments of some real terror, they were brilliant military commanders. You know, Heinz Guderian and Erwin Rommel; these guys wrote the book on modern warfare.
That's right. They really did, especially Rommel and Guderian too. But he didn't realize what he had, and he decided he was smarter than they were. Anyway. You know, his chief of staff was a man named Beck, and when Hitler was about to invade Poland, he resigned because he saw the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah.
He didn't want to have anything to do with it. And he was the smartest guy in the whole military operation there. But Hitler proceeded with his crazy plan anyway. I mean, really, when you think about it, he gave that speech declaring war on the United States only 3 days after Pearl Harbor because he thought that the Japanese had so weakened us that he could take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did that, he did it mainly to win over the German population. He wanted them to think that he was powerful enough to do that. because he needed their support. But the military people knew better.
Yeah, he basically sealed his fate by doing that without any question. How did this come to your attention? Because clearly this stuff is not written about in the history books that I read when I was in school.
KB, most of the... My first book, Alien World Order, ended without my getting into anything to do with the solar system.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized later that I had stopped prematurely because there was a lot more to be discussed regarding the solar system. And that's why I continued and wrote this book, because it wasn't enough to point out that the Nazis had taken over the American industry, which they did. And I did point that out in the first book. When von Braun sat down at the desk of the head of NASA, that was the ultimate point at which the Germans had taken over, starting with Operation Paperclip. But I didn't realize that they had taken it out into the solar system at that point, and so I knew I had to write Dark Fleet. And basically, most of the information for Dark Fleet came from the super soldiers. I think you're probably aware of who the super soldiers were and what they were all about, right?
Yep, but explain it to the audience.
Well, there were men that were taken to the moon and Mars to fight alongside the Nazis against the indigenous populations on the moon and Mars. There were two indigenous populations on Mars that the Germans had to contend with. They were the insectoids and they were reptoids. They called them reptoids. They were not actually reptilians. They actually hated the real reptilians, and they fought against them and they prevailed. But they were indigenous, and they had to be disposed of by the Germans when they started their Martian colony. And so that had to be taken into account. And I had to get into all of that, and that information mainly came from the super soldiers. There were 10 of them that I dealt with. The main one was Randy Kramer. The testimony of the super soldiers, they all supported each other, and they all agreed on the main points of the Moon and Mars operations. And so putting that all together, I realized that it had to be discussed. And then finally, when I found out about Solar Warden, by studying what Michael Sala had to say and what Corey Good had to say, I just put it all together, and it was very obvious to me that the whole story had to be told, because it didn't end with my other book. And that's why I got into this book.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Let's walk through the actual progression of this. 1939, the Nazis actually launch into space from Antarctica. They go to the moon first?
Yes, they landed on the moon in 1942.
And they set up a base and a colony there?
Yes, they did. As soon as they landed on the moon, they started burrowing under the surface, and that's how the moon colony began. And now it's an 11-story building underground, a bell-shaped building, and it's called the Lunar Operations Command. But that was 1942, so they've been working on that for how many years now?
You know, 50 years already. 42, 60, we're almost 80 years, right? Getting close.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's become more of an interplanetary meeting place, really, sort of like the United Nations. That's the way they run it. They take visiting interplanetary guests on tours of the facility. That's like the UN. That's like the planetary UN, the solar system UN.
Are they still there? Are they still on the moon?
Oh yeah. The Dark Fleet, the headquarters of the Dark Fleet is on the moon.
I mean, clearly we're several generations on from those that originally landed there. Or do they also have some longevity technology from the reptilians that allows some extended life?
They do have that technology. They have amazing technology. I don't know if you've heard of a man named Frank Chile. You should get him as a guest if you can, because I don't know how much longer he's going to be around.
Okay.
He has a tremendous amount of information. And what he said in one of his lectures was, in his lecture to MUFON in Los Angeles, he said that the technology that the Nazis have on the moon and Mars is about 1,000 years ahead of what we have here.
Oh, wow.
Okay? And most of that is in biotechnology, not so much in physical technology, although they have that too. But biotechnology, they can actually put a soul, take a soul out of one body and put it in another one. They're incredibly advanced on the moon and Mars.
And these are technologies that we hear about kind of in a science fiction angle here on Earth right now. But you're saying they already have this technology, yeah?
Exactly. But for them, that's routine now. Plus this regeneration tank. You've probably read that part in my book, right?
Yep.
Where if a soldier loses an arm or a leg, they can regenerate it in a matter of hours, or maybe a couple of days. They can just regrow the whole limb or the whole organ in a regeneration tank. So think of that technology. He was looking for the fountain of youth.
Yeah, yeah.
And there it is.
Wow.
There it is.
Wow. So let's again extend this a little further. So the Nazis get to the moon in 1942. They build a base which is still in use today, but they don't stop there. They from there go to Mars. Is that next?
Yes. Yeah, that was next, exactly.
And
the first
they conquered it.
The first expedition to Mars was 1945.
Okay.
And don't forget 1945. At that point, von Braun was still in Germany. So he had no part in it.
But he was aware of all of this.
Yes, he was.
I mean,
yes,
he was. He was instrumental in much of this.
No, he really wasn't instrumental in that early. No. He was involved. He may have been a consultant, but between 1945, when he first came to America in Operation Paperclip, and 1950, he was more or less a prisoner in New Mexico.
Yeah.
In Texas, I think it was. In Fort Bliss in Texas, and he had to have an armed guard with him wherever he went. So he didn't have much mobility for those 5 years. But the first German expedition to Mars took place in 1945 from Antarctica. Directly from Antarctica, right? They did have a ice-free surface area where they built launch facilities. So it was not that difficult to do, really.
Is that base still in operation?
They call that Base 211.
Is 211
still Base 2?
Is 211? Yeah, is 211 still in operation?
It's still in operation, but now it's an international. The Americans and the Germans started working together there. The aerospace companies from America and Germany started working together in Antarctica because the American scientists realized that the Germans were going to the moon and Mars. And they had to work together. So basically it became international eventually. And now it's more American than it is German.
I mean,
the Germans have basically relocated to Mars.
You know, we many of us have heard of this Antarctica Treaty where it's supposed to be off limits to the international community. Is that the effort to keep it secret?
Well, it's supposed to be international, just like the UN, really.
Mm-hmm.
People can start colonies in Antarctica, but they cannot annex any territory there,
right?
Under the UN agreement. So, they can have colonies under the ice, but they can't say it's part of Germany.
Right. Yeah. So as we progress, the World War II itself comes to an end. The Nazis are already on the moon; they're on Mars. Yet we undergo what we call Operation Paperclip, or what they called Operation Paperclip, where we round up a bunch of the top Nazi scientists, and we basically bring them to the United States. I think one of the justifications for that was because we did not want them to fall in Soviet hands. Was this by design by the reptilians and the Nazis? Was this part of their plan to become integral in the U.S.? Space program, the U.S. technology. Okay, why? What were they looking to do?
In the very beginning, they realized that the United States industrial capacity was so far beyond anything else, and they decided that, and I think probably the reptilians more or less advised them of this, that the best thing they could do was to take over our industry and our industrial and financial apparatus. And that's why they invaded Russia, not the United States, because they wanted to keep the United States intact until they took it over. So they had some good friends here in our government. They had Allen Dulles, and they had John Foster Dulles. John Foster Dulles was the Secretary of State under Eisenhower, and Allen Dulles was the head of the CIA. Now, in 1953, now, Eisenhower was very naive when it came to political problems, but these guys were veterans of politics in Washington, and they pretty much took over the government. And so there was some history between the Dulles brothers and Nazi Germany going all the way back to 1933. Those two brothers were lawyers in New York, working for one of the top New York law firms, and they were the ones that traveled to Cologne, Germany, to help the Kuhn-Lieb law firm finance Hitler's money that he needed to run for the chancellorship. Mm. They were involved in that.
Wow.
So their connection with Hitler goes all the way back to 1933. So you can be sure that when they started bringing over the paperclip people, Allen Dulles was very happy with that because he was basically a Nazi sympathizer right from the beginning.
Wow.
And so was his brother.
Hmm.
And his brother was the Secretary of State.
Werner, tell us a little more about Werner von Braun. Obviously, a brilliant man, and in many ways, he's credited with being the father of rocketry and that science. Was it really him? And tell us a little bit more about his personality.
Well, you know, he was a Nazi. He was a colonel. And he had no compunctions about using Jewish and other slave labor to create his rockets. And he may have been squeamish about it. He may not have liked it, but he went along with it. And so when he took over the desk of the head of NASA, well, it was actually the head of the Marshall Space Flight Center, that was in 1960. He was the head of our space program in 1960.
Wow.
Okay, now, Eisenhower was, Kennedy had just become the president at that point.
Yep.
And so he had to deal with von Braun. By that time, Hans Kammler, the Nazi general, the German general who had helped develop the Nazi flying saucers in Czechoslovakia, was already in Antarctica. So here we had Kammler in Antarctica developing the Nazi flying saucer fleet, and we had von Braun as the head of our NASA, and the German scientists, even the worst Nazis, had their records cleaned, and they were working for our top universities and our top aerospace companies. So they had basically taken over by 1960.
And there's a great picture in your book of Kennedy walking with Werner von Braun next to a helicopter. Was Kennedy unhappy with what was going on with these German scientists getting key leadership positions within U.S. power circles?
He was, but he couldn't deny the fact that there were some very top scientific people there. And he knew that a lot of them were ex-Nazis, but he was powerless, really, to do anything about it. But he did finally understand the situation, especially after the aborted invasion of Cuba.
Right.
And that's when he said to Dulles he was going to break the CIA up into 1,000 pieces because he realized the situation at that point. And that's when he started the DIA, which became his version of the CIA.
And, of course, we all know what happened a little bit after that. The U.S. space program itself. Now, Werner von Braun is the head of NASA in 1960, and Kennedy comes in and he talks about putting a man on the moon. Was the U.S. space program another diversion in some fashion? I mean, obviously, if Werner von Braun knew that the Germans had already, or the Nazis anyway, had already gotten to the moon, what was that all about? What was the U.S. space program's objective if basically the people designing it knew it had already been done?
Well, with von Braun at the head of it, he was perfectly positioned to keep us from going there.
I see.
And since he knew about the moon lunar colony already, and he knew about the Mars colony, that was his primary role, was to keep us from going up there. And so he had to go along with Kennedy because Kennedy was president, and so he helped him. But he did not do it willingly. He did it to cooperate with Kennedy, and by developing the Saturn V5 rocket, which they needed for the heavy lifting, that made the difference. But they still, they were not going to put up with Kennedy any longer, and they had him assassinated. He was in the way.
Yeah,
he was in the way, and they got rid of him.
Yeah, yeah, and his brother. The U.S. Obviously had the series of Apollo missions, and the official reports are that we did go to the moon. Is there reason to believe, and a lot of people do believe, that there's, you know, we're not being told the whole truth about that. Do you have any opinion on whether or not we actually went? And if we did go, did we know that there was a German base there at the time?
Well, we found out when we got there.
We did.
Because Neil Armstrong said so right over the intercom, which was picked up by all the amateur radio enthusiasts here. He said, boy, they're sitting on the top of the crater looking right at us. And boy, these babies are huge.
Wow.
That was recorded, mm-hmm. that comment. And I put that in my book. So we found out quickly that they were there.
So let's go back to the Nazi story here. They have a colony on and a base on the moon. They go to Mars. They basically conquer that planet. What happens next? What is their ultimate goal? And is it still is there still a fight going on?
Well, their ultimate goal was they took over the solar system. Basically, they did not actually invade Venus. No. Because they knew that they couldn't really conquer Venus, mm-hmm. because there was some very strong opposition there. But they basically controlled the solar system from the moon and Mars. And they set up very profitable mining operations and slave trade, a very profitable slave trade all over the solar system and out into the galaxy. Because they were creating cyborgs in their laboratory on Mars. And that was the basic information that I needed. I got that from Ileana Kopolnik. Well, she was far beyond a super soldier because she was on Mars for 50 years. They took her there when she was, I think, 6 years old because they knew she was very, very expert in language translations and that she would eventually evolve into a very important language person on Mars, where they had a lot of bewildering languages were being spoken by visitors from all over the galaxy and all over the planet. So they wanted somebody like that. And so she worked there in their cybernetics laboratory, which was part of what they called the ICC base on Mars. The ICC base is the Intergalactic Corporate Conglomerate. And there are a lot of American companies involved in that, by the way. Aerospace companies. It's not just German, but German is the official language on Mars.
Wow.
And so she worked there, and she understood what was going on, and she found out that their main concern was the manufacture of cyborgs, because they were selling cyborgs all over the galaxy, and it was very profitable. And they were all being built at that Mars facility at the cybernetics laboratory there. So it was her information that I used for that particular part of the book.
So when you talk about slave...
She's still out there, by the way.
She is.
Find information.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to do that. You talk about a slave trade. Now, is the slave trade the cyborg trade, or are we talking about human slaves, or are we talking about the indigenous people of maybe Mars or the moon being used as slaves?
Well, you know, there's a lot of human slaves there, and a lot of the abductees that were taken off this planet were taken off as slaves. And so I wrote a whole chapter on Tony Rodriguez, because you know many of the abductees that they took off this planet, they were used as soldiers and in military operations on Mars and the Moon. But some of them they just took as slaves, and he was one of them. He got them mad because he angered one of the children of one of the Illuminati higher ups, and so he was abducted as a slave. And I used his experience to point out exactly how they treated the slaves. But they had many, many of the slaves are human. They're from this planet.
Mm. Was Roswell a German craft?
No, it was not a German craft.
That was not. Was it reptilian?
I don't think so. No, that was from the Zeta Reticuli system.
Okay, yeah. We don't seem to have a reptilian presence that we can easily point out right now. But are they in some way currently in league with the U.S. government or any other world government other than the Nazis who basically have left and are focused on Mars and the moon at this point? But do the reptilians still have a major presence here?
Yes, they operate through the Illuminati.
The Illuminati
run everything on this planet.
That's what I was... That's, yeah,
they run the media, they run the banks, they run the medical systems, they run the drug companies. They're all wealthy because the reptilians make sure they are wealthy.
Yeah. So then, I guess my question was going to be, why, if they're conquering the universe, why haven't they conquered Earth? But in fact, what you're saying is they already control Earth. They don't need to conquer Earth.
Exactly. They keep us around like cattle on a cattle ranch, because they do. You know, they do eat human beings. You know that, right?
I didn't know that, but now I'm not gonna sleep tonight because of that.
Yeah, we are a food source.
Wow, that's not very comforting at all. There is an ongoing space war, right? This is still an ongoing effort by the reptilians and the Nazis to dominate the universe. Or not necessarily the universe, but the solar system.
Well, according to my information, my research, the reptilians control 21 star systems in this section of the galaxy.
Oh wow!
And it's all done through slavery. Basically, slavery is their main modus operandi, but they can run a slave colony without the people being aware of the fact that they're actually slaves, just like what's going,
yeah,
just like what's going on here. We don't realize that we're slaves, do we?
Right. Well, that's the perfect setup, isn't it?
It is exactly because they're not giving us all the technologies that we would need to be free. It wouldn't allow us to have those technologies. So that's their way of keeping us as enslaved. And basically, we are enslaved. We're all working for them, basically, for the Illuminati. And David Icke gets into that in great detail, and
yeah.
I think his information is very, very good, I believe. His research is excellent.
Yeah, I've had him on the program, too. He is excellent, does a very good job. Let's talk about Mars for a second. We've recently, seen big news stories about our unmanned craft that are exploring Mars, sending back data. Is that a ruse? Is it part of the reptilian cause? Are we being lied to? What's happening with that?
They're not going to actually. We do have a colony on Mars. It was established in 1964. It's a joint U.S.-Russian colony.
Oh, okay.
So we do have a presence on Mars, and they tolerate us there. And it is basically American. But that's as far as we've gotten there. They're so powerful on Mars that it would take an all-out assault by the entire military on this planet to ever try and defeat them there. They've already used nuclear weapons on Mars to wipe out the reptoid, the insectoid population, and they're tremendously powerful now, and they have technology that's so far ahead of ours we can't even begin to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've talked about some of that as well. Why won't they share it with us? I mean, it seems like if we're to be a healthy slave population, it seems like some of those biological technologies would come in handy.
Well, it's because they're Nazis, basically, and we know what Nazis are all about.
Yeah, we do.
They're Yeah, they're Nazis and they're bullies, and that's the way they are. It's in their DNA or something. I'm not sure. I spent the first part of the book getting into that subject because I thought it was necessary, and I had to talk about what they did in Africa, how they enslaved and created a genocide in Africa in order to make that point.
That was
before World War One.
Yeah, as you wrote this, researched it, wrote it, and released it, and you're revealing this to a lot of people that may not have been aware of it otherwise. Have you been threatened at all? Anybody coming knocking on your door, maybe in a proverbial way, to say, "Hey, Len, stop talking about this"?
No, they haven't.
Really?
They haven't tried to do anything with me, and I don't care if they do or not. I have to do what I have to do.
Sure.
And if they don't like it, they could let me know, but nobody has really complained so far. But, you know, really, they don't have to. I'm small potatoes. I really am small potatoes. They have no reason to try and keep me from doing anything.
Yeah, I suppose if all of us know the truth here, there's not really any way we're going to stop anything.
Exactly. I mean, it's all about technology now, and they have technology that is so far advanced. I mean, are you aware of the computing power of the quantum computers?
Yep.
Did you read that part of my book?
Yes. I'm trying to remember the numbers, like a trillion functions. I know you're going to have to remind me, but I do remember the magnitude by which these quantum computers can work.
Right, exactly. And according to Ileana Kopolnik, they've had quantum computing on Mars and the moon for, 50 years now.
Wow.
And if you read the story about the chapter on Penny Bradley, I think it's chapter 9. I can't remember now. She had to wear a chip behind her ear, and then that put her in touch with the quantum computer of the craft. And basically, she ran the craft just by thinking, just through her thoughts. That's the kind of technology they have. It's unbelievable. We have nothing like that yet.
Yeah, I don't think we're really even close yet. I mean, as you said, there's, a 1,000-year head start that they've got on some of this technology.
Yes, but we do have Solar Warden, and I did want to make that point in my book.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. Obviously, it's a U.S. Space military organization.
Yeah, primarily the Navy. It's the Navy, not the Air Force, that has it. And we do have spaceships that are a kilometer in length. We do have very, very large spacecraft. And we are out into the galaxy already. And I talked about that speech by Ben Rich. Are you familiar with that?
Yep.
You know what he said in 1989, right?
Remind me.
He said... We already can take ET home. Anything you can imagine, we can already do. we can now take ET home. He said, but it's locked up in a black program so tight that it would take an act of God to get it out. That's what he was referring to.
Wow.
That was in 1989. So we've come even a long way from then. So we were building those spaceships. As early as the 70s and 80s, and we do have them. We do have them, and we're already out into the galaxy. But the Nazis still control this solar system, and we're in a subordinate role now.
So it's the Solar Warden Space Armada. How large is this armada? Is it hundreds of vessels, or is it two? Do we know?
Well, I talked about it in the book. I can't remember all the details, but let's see. You know, Scotty Good worked directly in the Solar Warden program. He says that the Solar Warden fleet is divided into research and development subfleet and a military branch. And as of 2005, there were 8 ships, an equivalent to aircraft carriers, and 43 protectors, which are space planes. And one of them was lost recently to an accident in Mars orbit while it was attempting to resupply a multinational colony within Mars. And I made the point there that this base was established in 1964 by America and Soviet teamwork. So it's a very large... The Solar Warden has reached a point where it's actually quite a large and very highly armed military fleet. And there are battles that are taking place in space, but we're not challenging them right now. We're not challenging them right now because they're so far ahead of us.
Yeah. Yeah. The Solar Warden Space Armada, these craft are large enough. You described them as a aircraft carrier in space, basically. If they're large enough, they must be visible by amateur astronomers looking through a telescope, or are they cloaked in some fashion?
The claim of a secret... I'll read to you what I said in my page 186 in my book. The claim of a secret base on Mars was confirmed by a physicist named Henry Deakin, who had worked at Lawrence Livermore Laboratory. He spoke to Kerry Cassidy and Bill Ryan of Project Camelot in 2007. He said, transport is by two means, stargates for personnel and small items, and spacecraft for larger items of freight. This alternative fleet is codenamed Solar Warden. So it's, we do know all about it, but the thing to keep in mind is that our military is tied in with the German military, the so-called MILABs, and the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower tried to warn us about. We are basically tied into that, and that constitutes what we call the cabal.
Yeah.
They're not really American in terms of honoring the I'm honoring their vows of the vows to the Constitution.
Right.
So this is where we are now. We're really at the point now where we could begin to challenge them if we choose to, but we wouldn't have a chance.
Mm-hmm. We're going to run out of time here, so let's talk about the cosmic web.
Okay. With Frank Chili, who I mentioned a little earlier.
Yep.
It was he who said this in an interview with the MUFON. I think it was with MUFON in Los Angeles. He said that the technology is about 1,000 years ahead of what we have. Their technology is about 1,000 years ahead of what we have right now.
Mm-hmm.
He said that actually they have the ability, the Nazis have the ability to travel to the center of the galaxy in 45 minutes. That's what we're talking about here.
Wow.
So the cosmic web has to do with stargates, and Corey Good was the one who talked mainly gave us that information.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with what he said about that?
Mm. Yeah, but remind the audience.
Okay, so you know that he said there is a... Basically, all the stars are connected by what he called a cosmic web.
Yep.
And what we call them on Earth, we call them stargates. But they really, what they really are entrances to the cosmic web, and that all the stars are basically connected. And when they travel through the cosmic web, is instantaneous. It's going through a different dimension, really. It's not going through space any longer. It's going through time and space, which mm-hmm. are connected, and it constitutes a cosmic web. But in order to travel through the cosmic web, you have to know how to get into it and how to get out of it. And so that was one of the things he was involved with when he worked on Solar Warden. But that means that there really is no star too distant
right.
for us to reach. All we have to do is know how to go through the cosmic web. And that means that the whole universe is basically very closely connected.
That's right. Yeah, that changes.
And that's an amazing thing to contemplate, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it changes everything. And again, another thing I want to touch on before we run out of time here, because you mentioned dimensions. Now, when we talk about the reptilians, you make the comparison to humans or what we know in our physical world. We are a three-dimensional being, but the reptilians are in the fourth dimension?
Yeah, they basically dwell in the fourth dimension. And David Icke talked about that, and James Bartley. A lot of people realize that. When we talk about the fourth dimension, we're really talking about what used to be called the astral realm.
Mm-hmm.
It's invisible to us, but it's a place that we go to when we die. And they have that advantage by dwelling in the astral realm, and so that gives them a tremendous advantage over anything in the physical realm. And what was the point I was trying to make on that? What was the question you asked again?
Just it was the differences between the reptilians living in the fourth dimension versus us being a three-dimensional being.
Okay. Have you had any contact with Alex Collier? Do you know who he is?
I don't.
Well, Collier said that the human race is much more advanced than the reptilians. They are fourth-dimensional creatures. Yes, they're at home in the fourth dimension. We are actually sixth-dimensional creatures. And they know that, and they are basically afraid of us.
Really?
Yes. We are. Our bodies may be three-dimensional, but our souls, our spirits are six-dimensional. And so once we truly comprehend that and start reaching into the sixth dimension, we become really almost semi-divine. And we have that potential. And so once that happens, then they'll know that the game is over. Mm. Once we expand our consciousness to that point, they no longer have any power over us at all.
So then it's very important to them to keep us enslaved and keep us ignorant of this.
Keep us dumb and dumber, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. That's why they throw out all the stuff that we see in the movies and on TV. Because that's their goal, is to keep us dumb and dumber. Once we reach our true potential, they know that the game's over.
What's the long-term prognosis for all of this? Is it that the human race, you know, barring any great ascendancy to consciousness or greater consciousness, that we just remain slaves to this and just remain pawns to the reptilians and the Nazis?
No. What? The future of the human race is basically Star Trek. That's who we will be in the future. We will be the Star Trek generation.
Really?
I don't know how many years it's going to take for us to get there, but we will get there. We will free the slaves, and we will assume the position that we're supposed to be, that we've been created for by our friends in the galaxy. You know, we were created by the DNA from 12 different human races in this galaxy. That's the so-called Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, they made 22 upgrades to our DNA. And basically, they're preparing us for our role in this galaxy. And we will get there. We will become the Star Trek generation.
And you say they.
I don't know how long it will take.
You say they. Are we talking about the reptilians / Nazis? Or are we talking about another race?
They will become inconsequential when we reach that point.
Really? Len, the work is fascinating. It's very, very interesting. Well presented as well. The book is called Dark Fleet, The Secret Nazi Space Program and the Battle for the Solar System. But it goes well beyond that. It really offers a lot of great information and insight to who we are and why we are. Where can people get the books? And if they were to start with your work, should they start with this book, or do you recommend one of your other books to start with?
Well, I think they should start with Alien World Order, because that's where it all starts.
Okay.
In that book. I did talk about Serpo, and I did talk about other things in my first book, but really, Alien World Order and Dark Fleet should be read together, really. And my books are available from Amazon, from all the bookstores, Barnes and Noble, and Inner Traditions is the publisher. But I think that ordering it through Amazon would be the best way to do it. And I didn't give you my website, did I yet?
No, not yet. Please give that to us.
Okay, it's in a primitive state right now, but it's usable. It's called Alien-Secret History. And I'm still working on it, but it's accessible and it's usable.
Okay, great. What's next for you? You got another project in mind? Are you watching and going to write about more of this?
I'm juggling a few things in my mind, JB. One of the things I'm really fascinated by right now is how the Germans were able to assassinate Kennedy, because I know that the Nazis were involved in that, and I'm trying to make that connection more obvious.
Yeah.
And I have enough material now to get going with it, but because he was in the way, and they had to get rid of him. And I'm trying to make that point if I can, and that's what I'm working on right now.
Oh, that'd be terrific. Well, keep us informed. We'd love to talk about that with you as you're writing or once you actually finish that project. That would be terrific. Len, thanks for your time. Thanks for being here tonight. Sorry about the rocky start with the technology, but that happens. Please stay safe with everything that's going on in the world around us, and we'll hope to have you back soon.
Okay, JV. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you.
Beyond Reality Paranormal is hosted by J.V. Johnson and produced by Orion Palmer and Slick Eddie Edwards. Like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please consider supporting the program either through your podcast platform, click on the link in the description, or on Patreon at Joha Productions. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Paranormal or you have a recommendation for a guest, contact our producer, Slick Eddie Edwards. Eddie is spelled with a Y at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com.